How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Okay, here we are, the first ever Reigning Jays podcast. The first one, number one, with the two Jays, Jay King and John Corrales. Jay King, finally, we are together on a regular podcast. It's great to do this. It's great to finally get this together.
Finally, I mean, what did we do, two of them together, like, 3 years ago, and now finally we get the real thing?
We've tried and tried and tried, and for the people who are going to see the finished product, you haven't seen the hell that we have walked through just to get to this point in recording and getting everything all set. But here we are, it's the Reigning Jays podcast with Jay and John, the first one, and I think it's fitting, Jay, that we're doing it under such promise for the Boston Celtics. We've had two games against Euro teams. The Celtics look awesome. We're clearly the favorites for the NBA championship right now.
Obviously, I think they're going to go 82-0. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And then sweep through the playoffs, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be the Moses Malone, sad to say, memorial, faux sweep to the playoffs for the Celtics. Well, let's take a look at what happened over the past week. We started with the Celtics in Italy against Milano, somebody, doesn't even matter. They won that game by 30. Good all-around performances. David Lee looked really good. Isaiah Thomas was Isaiah Thomas. A lot of positives to take out of that. And then they went to Spain. They took on Real Madrid. It was a tighter game from the outset, but ultimately the Celtics went on to another huge win as an NBA team, any decent NBA team should go out to Europe. Again, nice balanced performances. Avery Bradley looked really good. Another Isaiah Thomas, another great Isaiah Thomas performance, another good David Lee performance. So as an astute viewer, Jay King, what are your net positives from this little European swing? What's your biggest net positive out of this?
I think, you know, we talked a lot about their depth and the Celtics depth and how deep they were and how many, not great players, but good players they have. And I think that was so evident during the first two games. Like, they just have a lot of good players. And the one takeaway I took, the biggest takeaway, was that David Lee might help that first unit's offense. And if he does, because really, like, the whole second half of the year, they were really good, and it was only because their bench was really good. Their starters kind of stunk. And I think if David Lee just helps that starting lineup become average, because he's a lot better playmaker than Brandon Bass, all of a sudden you have a chance to see them, you know, take a nice step forward next year without having too many other differences. So I thought David Lee was really impressive, and I think he really fits what they need to do. It was all good things from that. And obviously, if you can beat Real Madrid by 15, you're probably going to win an NBA championship.
Of course. The one thing playing off of the David Lee is that I know I joked in the first 5 minutes of the game in Italy, he looked like he was just really forcing his offense. So I made the joke about no pass Bass, you know, I got your back. But the reality is that David Lee is a pretty good passer. And man, does that really facilitate the ball movement. You saw the Celtics. Now, again, we know the level of competition. You try not to really blow it out of proportion. But the ball movement was still crisp. The players were in the right position. The players found each other. They didn't hesitate. It's those little things that you're looking for. And sometimes ball movement can be overrated because anybody can whip a pass around the perimeter. But they ran a lot, of plays where David Lee came up to the high post and spun and found guys back door or found guys on the wing, and they really, really moved that offense.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, too, like last year, they played two completely different styles from the starters to the bench. Like, the bench was, like, completely freelance, like, flowing, passing the ball, finding teammates, and then it was all bogged down with the starters. And obviously it's against two opponents that aren't NBA. But you can see how David Lee facilitates that ball movement that they had in the second unit and that they didn't have in the first unit. And, you know, if he does change that even a little bit, that's a big help. So all good from David Lee. I thought another one of the takeaways was Avery Bradley. And he, 7 of 8 from threes. And it wasn't just that. He's taking different shots. The last few years, I've always thought, like, Avery Bradley is the type of guy I wish was with a better team. Because they were running dribble handoffs with him. They were trying to feed him. And he's not that type of player where you can, like, run offense through him, things like that. But when he's chilling in the corners and he's able to just spot up, that he's a good shooter. It was like taking it back to the 2012 when he's alongside KG and Paul Pierce. Obviously, they don't have that type of caliber player anymore. But his role looks like it might have changed this year. Obviously, it's still two games. Everything we say today is still two games.
It's a blanket caveat.
Use that caveat.
Understand exactly what the situation is.
We are completely overreacting to a European trip, two games. But that being said, if he does change and his role is more similar to the one he played in 2012, I think that helps a lot. And I think David Lee is part of that too, because he's more of a playmaker, I think, than even Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley, the two guards in that unit. So moving Bradley to the corners could be a huge difference, you know, or at least a little difference, and every little bit helps. Like, the difference between, as Brad Stevens has stressed, the difference between, like, barely being a playoff team and being one of the better playoff teams in the East is not that many points per game.
Right. You know, the thing about Avery Bradley, what makes this development so important, it's not just that his role is changing. It really is that the types of shots that he's taking are changing. I have no problem with him taking 14 shots a game. But the above-the-break three-pointers and the long twos. Avery Bradley's habit was above the break, get run off of the three, and all he did was take one dribble in and take that shot. And that just ends up being the long two, the classic Avery Bradley long two. Now, if he's not in that position...
And he's good at that shot, but it's just not an efficient shot regardless.
Well, yeah. I mean, that shot, it's fine, but he's not shooting a high enough percentage. You need to shoot that shot at like 55, 60% for that to be. No one's going to do that. No one. Like, that's KG territory. Like, KG's the only one you want around the top of the key taking jumpers. Like, that's about it. But Avery Bradley, for him to be down below the break on the side, he had one really nice play where he just shook the defender, took one dribble to the left, still in that corner three distance. I mean, that was a really heads up play. He didn't take a step in. It was almost like Brady for the Patriots when he avoids somebody in the pocket. When a pass rusher comes in, it's not like he's a big scrambler. He just moves just enough for the guy to go by him. And that's kind of what Avery Bradley did on that particular play. And what I'm looking forward to, he just did enough, took that one little dribble, stepped to the side, defender went past him, he didn't panic, and he still took that same same shot from and he nailed it. And that's the perfect NBA play for today's NBA. That's huge for me.
Yeah, and that was something he wouldn't have done last year. That was last year. he's taking a one dribble pull up. It's going to be a 20-foot jumper, and it's going to be the most inefficient shot in the game. Even if he makes it, he's going to do it 40% of the time, and that's not an efficient shot. Now, if he makes the three 40% of the time or close to that, now that's efficient. So that could be a huge change. And, you know, we're overreacting to one shot, obviously, but he didn't do that a lot last year. I'm not sure if he really ever did it last year.
I know it's one shot, but, you know, it's just the evidence. And at this point, after two games and whatever, we're looking for the evidence that this guy has grown. And he's a young guy. It's not like he's 35 and we're asking him to. He's still growing as a player.
Yeah.
He still hasn't reached his peak. And this is still new for him under Brad Stevens. So he's taken the lessons from last year. He's processed that season. And a very tumultuous season, especially at that guard position last year. Now it's a little more solid, even though there's a glut of guards. There's still a little more stability as far as he's concerned. So it's good to see him learn that lesson. I want to go to another guy, unless you got one more point for Avery Bradley.
I was just going to say, that is something the coaching staff has been stressing with not just him, but everybody, to stay away from the long twos. From day one of practice,
they've been
charting what types of shots they take in practice. And apparently, like, the types of shots they've taken in practice have completely changed. And now their shot profile, even in practice, is a lot better, to where they're taking more threes, fewer long twos. And it looks like a big change so far. So, I mean, that could be a major change for them, as because their offense wasn't good last year. Even after the All-Star break, they were 19th in offense. So you get a sub out a couple of those long twos a game for either layups or threes, and that's a huge difference.
Well, and that plays right up to the point that I am going to make now. It's the next net positive that I have is Kelly Olynyk, who has shown a bit of growth. And, you know, Grant, now we've seen it. He played for Team Canada, so it's all been against international competition, but it's still, we're looking for that evidence, and the evidence is the mentality. The fact that he's crossing guys over like he did it twice. He did it once in each game, which, I mean, nasty, nasty crossover dribbles. Like,
I couldn't believe where the hell did that come from? I couldn't believe the first one. And then the second one, I was like, might just become habit now.
He just he did it just to prove that he could do it, it seemed like, because it was the same exact move.
And so
I think that shows a level of aggressiveness that we need from Kelly Olynyk. And now, he did the first one, and I, you know, had my Twitter reaction, and somebody said, well, he had Amir Johnson under the basket for the dunk, and he didn't give it to him.
Oh, shut up.
It's like,
Twitter reaction.
Come on.
It was a great crossover. He got to the hoop. He got fouled. Give the man some credit.
Right. And even if you could sit there and say, well, he did have Amir Johnson. Theoretically, he did. I like the fact that Kelly Olynyk didn't give the ball up for once. I like that he took a guy, a mismatch, set him up, and had that big crossover, boom, and told him, I'm waiting for that play where he just jukes a guy and the guy falls down and he does that, come here, and then fires it up in his face. Like, that's like the next thing for this guy. But in all seriousness, an aggressive Kelly Olynyk who makes the leap, and I've said it in 10 different forms now, I'm going to say it again in this one. If Kelly Olynyk can take that leap, not just get marginally better, that leap, that's the most important development for this Celtics team, because he then becomes a nightmare matchup. Just the threat. I'm not talking about him becoming Dirk Nowitzki. Just good enough to be that threat, like, I can't leave him in the corner. And I can't run out too hard on him because I know he's going to go by me. Like, just the threat to do that, it's going to really force defenses to react to him.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the other end of the spectrum, there is Jared Sullinger, who might be out of the rotation right now. I mean, he in an intra-squad scrimmage, he came off the bench. 10 guys started. He came off the bench. Stevens has said he wants a 10-man rotation. like, that's not a good sign. Obviously, we shouldn't read too much into the rotations right now, but it's starting to get to the point where we can decipher some things. And right now, Sullinger looks like he might be out of the rotation or, like, scrapping for minimal minutes. Man. And, I mean, when he went this summer to John Lucas and was tweeting photos of his weight loss, I thought he would come back in good shape at least, or better shape at least. He doesn't look any different. I think that's a huge disappointment for them. He's in a contract year. How do you come back in a contract year and not be in shape? Especially knowing your team just added David Lee and Amir Johnson, you're going to be fighting for minutes, and you come back in bad shape again?
Now, let me ask you this.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because you see him up close, and I have this debate in my head. Some people just have different body types, and that's just how they are. So when he runs, some people, he's got a fat ass and thick legs, and he's going to look like he's just big. But is he in bad shape, like legitimately in bad shape, or is he just, that's his body type, and he's the work?
No, he's definitely in bad shape. This is not a guy who's just like Paul Pierce is a guy who had a different body type, who was kind of thicker than most guys, but he was always in shape. Jared Sullinger is not in shape, and it's a huge disappointment, I think, that he didn't come back in shape. Because he is a guy who's really skilled. He's averaged almost a double-double last year, weighing almost 300 pounds.
Yeah.
If he lost 40 pounds and got in good shape and could actually guard on the perimeter like they want him to. But right now, what does he do for you? He can't space the floor because he's not a good enough shooter. Like, he's a good rebounder, yeah. So are couple of the guys he's going up against
for
a minute.
Johnson and Lee that are also good rebounders.
Yeah, and it's like, I think he's in trouble. I don't think right now he's in the rotation. Obviously, they still have five games left in preseason, but he's got a lot of proving to do. And I don't know. I mean, there's still time for him to get in shape. There's still time, but it's a contract year. I don't get how he didn't come back in shape. And I think that's really the most disappointing thing that happened this summer, because he is a talented guy, and if he had committed himself, he could have been looking for that leap year you're looking for from Olynyk.
That's really disappointing. I hate to hear that, because I like Sullinger. I think he's very skilled. There's no doubt he's got a lot of skills. He really can pass. He can shoot.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a good enough 3-point shooter yet, but that can be developed. And he's got a lot of skills. There's no doubt. He's got a lot of skills. But,
yeah,
you know, let's kind of look at this. If Stevens really is sending the message that Smart, Bradley, Lee, Crowder, and Zeller are your starters.
Or maybe Turner, because Turner's been out too. So he was a starter last year. We don't know what's going to happen when he comes back.
So even if, so then,
yeah.
Do you play? That's an entirely other discussion. Maybe we save this discussion for the next show, because we need to see Evan Turner at the three. I don't even want to go down that road right now. Let's just say, even if Evan Turner is a starter or off the bench, Crowder and Turner are interchangeable. Then you still have Thomas. So that's your seventh player. You've got Amir Johnson. You've got Kelly Olynyk, so we're up to nine. And then who am I missing? He's used R.J. Hunter off the bench. Who else is he? Let's see. Oh, Jarepko.
Yeah, Jarepko, yep.
Jarepko's in the rotation.
And Jarepko's been a three so far, which obviously Sullinger can't play. And honestly, the four guys Sullinger's competing against, David Lee looks like he's going to be a starter, and Stevens wants to rely on him to make plays. Amir Johnson's going to have a big role. You know that. He's their best defender.
Yep.
Tyler Zeller was their best rim protector last year. He's probably going to be in there. And Kelly Olynyk, who has a really, I think, underrated effect when he's on the court, mostly on their offense, just with spacing. And then there's Sullinger. So And once Sollinger got hurt, like, I thought when Sollinger got hurt last year, it would really hurt them. No. Like, they surged after that.
Yeah.
And I think he's out right now.
Yeah, no, so, I'm trying to dispute this. I'm trying to come up with some sort of argument against it, but I can't because the starters are working pretty well, and no one's talking about Tyler Zeller because Tyler Zeller, I don't want to say he's just there, but he's
like the new Brandon Bass.
Yeah, he is just he's reliable.
Yeah.
And look, he and David Lee really worked well together. Like, they have a nice little high-low thing going on. So they really can work together, and Zeller can be really effective as the fifth option, still can be, you know, work well within that defensive structure, can still hit some shots. He's not going to miss a lot of shots. He can still run pick and roll with those guys. So I think Zeller is a pretty good option as your starter. And then when you bring the bench in, whether it's Turner or Crowder that's in there, you had Amir Johnson and Isaiah Thomas, who really, really worked well together. I mean, I think that's like a combination. I think those two sub in and out together throughout the season. And then
Johnson can do anything. And he's a good enough defender where he can make up for some of Isaiah's flaws on that end too, which I think is huge.
Yeah. So, and then you throw Olynyk in with that group to space the floor. You run the pick and roll. So now you've got Thomas and Johnson running a pick and roll somewhere off of the wing, like a high post there. And you put Jerebko on one side and Olynyk on the other to space the floor. And you really got a lot of room to work. And then whatever, Evan Turner goes to the corner, or if it's Crowder, he goes into the corner. That works. That really works. So, yeah, I don't see where Sullinger fits in that equation. So maybe we're looking at Jared Sullinger's last season in Boston.
Yeah, it's weird because he's always been a big part. Like, he started, I want to say, every game before he got hurt last year. But it's like then all of a sudden life comes at you fast. Now he's not even starting against your squad scrimmages.
No. Yeah, seriously, because like you said, David Lee, I think, really – and we all knew David Lee wasn't coming here to just be here and come off the bench. He was coming here to be a starter from day one. So unless –
yeah, that was a weird trade because it's like a win-now trade. And I think they are really trying to win now. Like, they want to go out and win playoff series. They really are committed to winning now. And which is fine because they were going to be at least solid anyway. But the only thing is, do you want David Lee, who's in the last year of his contract, playing all these minutes when he makes your team marginally better? Or do you want to play Sullinger, the 23-year-old, who could be part of the long-term future? Like, to me, that's a debate, at least. You know, like, that's a thing where you go out and get David Lee and he pushes someone, either Sullinger or Olynyk, whoever, out of the rotation. Like, is that worth it? I don't know. Just to win a playoff series, maybe?
Well, you know? It's a good question. It's an excellent question. So, but
at the same time, if Sullinger can't beat out...
Why can't you re-sign David Lee? Why can't David Lee be part of the next 3 or 4 years?
I guess. I mean, but he's 32. He's been in the league for a long time. Like, he doesn't have too many good years left.
Right. I mean, it's a fair point. But, you know, if he does really well this year, then how much drop-off will there be the following year? If we're not asking him to be... We're not asking him to be the man on the team. We're asking him to facilitate the offense and not even be the primary scorer. So, I don't know. I can see the point of trying to bring Sullinger along. But maybe if he had come back this season in shape, they would have worked towards that plan. And they might have used Lee to push Sullinger and kind of worked around and then trade one. There's no reason to think there's not going to be some sort of in-season trade. That's I expect some sort of in-season trade. I think most people do.
Danny is rarely, rarely inactive.
Right. So we might be sitting here talking about David Lee, and the plan might be to pump him up so big that some team just can't resist taking him. And look, at the end of the year, by the time we get to the trade deadline, 60% of his salary has been paid, so they're only really investing $4 million in him or whatever the number is. And then it becomes palatable for other teams to kind of take that on. Maybe that's the plan. Or maybe now that becomes Sullinger. Maybe Sullinger becomes the guy that gets tacked on to Evan Turner and gets sent to Charlotte because they need a wing player. I mean, are we looking at that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, anything. Danny Ainge could do anything. So
this is crazy.
Literally anything. He's a surprising guy sometimes.
speaking of guys who are maybe on their way out, I really feel like we need to mention James Young.
Because, I mean, let's not say he's maybe on the way out. He's in his second year. Hasn't even started his second year yet, but
totally
still,
fine.
Still,
the caveat, that little asterisk goes there and everything. But
if we're there's looking, a huge but here.
We're looking for that evidence. So, and let's use this to kind of talk about the rookies too, because we saw all three of the rookies get some time and show some promise. And especially we're looking at RJ Hunter, because Hunter and Young play the same spot.
Yes.
Now, RJ Hunter went in against that competition and looked, for the most part, sometimes, you know, he made some rookie mistakes, but man, he looked smooth. He really looked like he was comfortable out there.
Yeah.
He was, when he came time to shoot, he shot with confidence and he had that typical quick trigger release, and the shots were falling for the most part. He was comfortable within the offense. He found some guys. It didn't look like he was lost at all. Felt like he belonged in that mix, and you saw like the hints, the evidence that, okay, I can see it. I can see where this kid might actually do something this year.
Yeah, I said this on Twitter. It didn't look like he didn't belong.
Yeah.
Whereas Young gets out there, and still, he's in his second year. He's had 1 year of professional experience. He gets out there, and he looks like the kid who showed up at science class and didn't know he had a test and had completely forgotten to study and is completely lost as soon as he looks at that exam. And he still looks that way. Like, he doesn't have that feel for the game you want, which Hunter does seem to have. And it's just like, at what point does his potential become like, okay, it's not going to pan out? And he's 20. He's the youngest guy on the roster. Like, every reaction we have to him has to come with that. Like, he is still, in year two, the youngest guy on the roster. He's athletic. He's long. He should be able to shoot. Like, he has a nice stroke. But at some point, like, he's going to have to learn how to play basketball and show that he knows how to play basketball, and he hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, that's the big thing. We can only go by the eye test at this point. I really don't want to overreact to things, but we saw it in summer league. He didn't look great, and then he got hurt again.
Yeah, that was the thing to me. Like normally guys come back in their second year of summer league, and they're clearly a step above because they've played professional competition for a full year. And Young came back, and it was like there was a ton of hype about him. Like, he's put on 15 pounds of muscle. He's right. Getting so much better. He's working so hard now. And then it was like, no, like, nope. Straight up belly flop the whole time. And
here's the thing. He dominated in Maine. Dominated.
He did.
In Maine.
He did. Like, he killed the
D-League.
Dominated coaches,
in the D-League.
Coaches were saying, like, he's the best player we've ever seen at the D-League. Like, right. He was so
then,
good in the D-League.
So then you sit there and you're like, okay, I've seen it before. There are a lot of guys who go into the D-League and really play well. Doesn't translate the next level. I personally said, okay, still a rookie. He's got a lot of promise. Dominated the D-League, no problem. Give him time. He's got that promise. Summer League is the D-League. Summer League is the same types of players. Some of those guys won't even make the D-League.
Yeah.
So is it because in Maine, he was the guy. He had the green light. You're the man, James Young. You can go do whatever. And then in the Summer League, and now he's trying to work within the offense with better players, and he just can't find himself without getting a ton of touches.
Yeah, I think whenever I start to overreact to young players, I remember what I thought of Avery Bradley his rookie year. Avery Bradley was an absolute mess his rookie year. Like, there was no salvageable offensive skill in his entire body. He would shoot shots that looked like they were going to go straight through the backboard, like, like couldn't dribble, couldn't shoot, like, literally couldn't do a single thing at the NBA level. And then literally the next year he started for a team that made it, I believe, to the Eastern Conference Finals. So it's like sometimes it's just a confidence matter. And the guys have the skills, and it's just like they get out there and it's only confidence. And I'm sure you've had this before playing basketball. Like, if you're not confident, it's a huge, huge difference between when you're sure of yourself out there.
I've never experienced
that. See, I have.
I'm only kidding. I totally, you know what? I will even say this. I'm currently experiencing that in my own league, in my own men's league. So, and I can honestly, you and I, we've both played. People who haven't played basketball don't understand. When you don't have that confidence, when you don't feel like things are going, the way the ball, it even feels differently in your hand. That jump shot, that when you feel great, man, you let that thing go. It's like, I tweeted out a video of Steph Curry.
When he's given the high five,
shot the ball goes in. The ball wasn't even at the top of the arc, and he's already looking for the high five. That's confidence. Yeah. When you're not confident, the follow-through feels wrong. The ball's coming off the wrong finger. You're like, you're praying for it to go in. You're like, you're trying to do like
even going after loose balls.
Yeah.
Even going after loose balls. Like, you can be slower going after loose balls. Like, when you're not confident, everything changes.
Absolutely.
And so I'm hesitant to judge Young yet. But, like, everything we see is that he is not getting it like he probably should be at this point, 1 year and change into his career.
So
that could change overnight, but now the signs are not good.
You're right. Now, I guess, and we'll, you know, I don't want to say this in a way that makes a judgment about Young, but it's a lack of confidence. I guess what's going to determine this is, why is there a lack of confidence? Is he having the lack of confidence because it's just not falling, or he's not used to being the main guy? And like I said, in Portland, you know, with the Red Claws, he is getting that, and you can see the difference. Or is he not confident because he just can't figure it out? You know, and like going back to your test analogy, is he failing the test because, oh, I forgot to study, but if he studied, he'd be fine? Or is he failing the test because he looks at that chalkboard, or for anybody who's, you know, 20 years old, the whiteboard, and it's just all blank? Like, is he looking at the instructions? Is he looking at the game plan and just not understanding? Is it too complicated for him, and he just feels, for lack of a better term, stupid? And when you feel stupid out there, and you're not sure where to go, and you're not grasping things, that's a problem. And I don't know what the answer is. If he's just not grasping it, then he's never going to make it. But if he's just struggling to figure out how to make it work without getting all of his touches, then I'm willing to wait. because yeah. that's something you can figure out. So I guess we'll just leave it there and wait and see. But man, like you know how it is. We all love guys. Our history, every team's history is littered with these names that were like, oh man, I'm going to pull for him. J.R. Giddens. Like those guys, like, I feel like he can be right there.
Gabe Pruitt is still going to be like the next great point guard now.
Right. So many guys that were like, I can see it. We're just going to wait. I don't know. Is he going to be one of those guys, or is he going to be a guy that develops in three, four years? Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay. So before we got a few minutes left. We don't want these things to go on too long.
Let's finish with something positive.
Yes.
Huh?
Instead of
bashing Solinger and Young, let's go with something positive.
Let's finish off with our final topic. These computer algorithms are spitting out some big win totals. We had the guys at Nylon Calculus, they put things together and said the Celtics are going to be a 49-win third seed. And then 538 came out today, and not only did their quote-unquote Carmelo system put the Celtics at 48 wins, which puts them clearly in the top half of the conference, they had the Marcus Smart player projection and the
James Harden.
Next one was Paul George.
Yeah. What? I mean, he's got some decent comparables right there.
Holy crap. I mean, really? Are the Celtics – I look at 48 and 49 wins, and I think, they're a couple of bounces away in a couple of those games from being a 50-win team. Are the Celtics, as currently constituted, good enough to win 48, 49, 50 games?
I don't think it's completely out of the question. I won't go so far as to say they're like a lock or anything like that to get 48 wins. But they were 24-12 over the last 36 games last season.
Yeah.
They will now have Isaiah Thomas for a full season.
Right.
They added David Lee, who should help the first unit scoring, which was abominable last year. Starters scored like the 76ers last year. Like, they were awful.
Terrible.
Awful to watch. And so that could help. Amir Johnson is going to help. Like, they returned almost everybody. They upgraded in the front court, and they'll have Thomas all year. And they still have Brad Stevens, who should figure out a way to put this all together, although he will have some guys who are upset that they don't have minutes. So I don't think it's out of the question. I do think that's like more toward the optimistic side of things, especially because I do think the East is going to be better. I think Indiana will be better. I think Detroit will be better. I think Miami will be a lot better. So, I think it's going to be tougher in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, Milwaukee too. I think it's going to be tougher in the Eastern Conference than it was last season.
Right. But it's not going to be tougher in the Atlantic Division. The Knicks
this
are still going to be bad.
This is true.
The Nets are still going to be bad. Toronto's going to be, I would say, about the same.
I'm really interested to see Kyle Lowry with his major weight loss because he has been killing people in preseason.
Yeah.
And, like, he came back. He was chunky-ish last year. Came back with, like all cut up.
Yeah. I mean, They were a good team last year. They were good.
Yeah.
And I expect them to be about as good. Like, I don't expect them to make any big leap or fall behind. So the Celtics are definitely improved. All of the points you made are definitely true. And it the bench gets better.
Yeah.
And that was their strength. And the starting unit gets better, which was a huge problem. So now, if the starting unit can hang.
Like, they just have to be decent. They don't have to be good, even. They just have to be, like, not terrible.
Right. They just have to be, like, okay. The starters have to be okay. Now, you're right. There's the optimistic view is Marcus Smart figures it out and starts to play a little bit better. And
more like James Harden.
More exactly like James Harden. And then does, you know, Avery Bradley, we talked about Avery Bradley. Think about that starting offense. Even with Marcus Smart, let's just say Marcus Smart is the same. David Lee facilitates the offense a little bit better, which still gets Tyler Zeller involved. And then whoever the wing player is just kind of contributes. And then Avery Bradley does the stuff we were talking about at the top of the show. Below the break, corner threes, much more efficient scorer. That alone makes that starting unit offense at least okay, tolerable, manageable. And then now you start throwing that second unit in there. If Kelly Olynyk makes that jump, if that Amir Johnson, Isaiah Thomas thing works out like we think it will, then that's got to translate to a few more wins, right?
Four
or five more wins, and then there you go. There's your projection.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's outrageous. I would guess, like, if I had to guess, I would go with 45.
I think 45. I was at 44 myself, so I was like,
yeah, but I mean, 48. I think it's optimistic, but definitely. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
But I mean, can these guys get to 50 wins? I mean, that's a big number. But look, when you say that's a 50-win team, that immediately tells you 50-win team is a good team. Like, when you follow the NBA closely and you say that's a 50-win team, the perception of that team changes. But
what'll be huge, they're going to have tons of cash space next year. Like,
right, yeah.
Free agents are looking at Brad Stevens and what he's doing. And if he can take this team to 50 wins, people will look at him and be like, wow, like, we really need to go there, because whatever he is doing to those guys is working. Like, if David Lee is like a point forward, like he said he's going to be, and like Jonas Jerebko, who had previously been toiling on the Detroit bench, and Crowder, who had previously been like low in the Dallas rotation, is like a real difference maker again. Like, Brad Stevens looks better and better, and free agents are going to be more likely to look at them and go, yeah, like, I want Boston. And like, we haven't seen it yet, but Amir Johnson was a big pickup. People don't understand, like, Amir Johnson was not a bad free agent pickup. Like, that's a great contract that they signed him to, and they convinced him to leave Toronto, where he had a heck of a run.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I'm really trying to rein in the enthusiasm, and you're not helping me at all, Jay. You're really not.
I mean,
you're not helping.
They're going to be terrible, John. They're going to be awful. Like,
that's not.
Everyone's going to be bad.
They
might not win 30 games.
This is not what we expected, though. This is not. And this is the beauty of sports. This is the beauty of it. And this is also indicative of the new NBA. This is part of this evolution, this three-pointers and layups league. It used to be, I remember when that mid-range jumper was so valuable. I mean, that used to be like a big thing, like, oh, he's got a great mid-range game. And that was, yes, I want that guy. He's an important guy off the bench with that great mid-range. You don't need mid-range anymore. You just need to be able to hit 35% from three, and then when somebody runs you off the line, be able to put on the floor twice and get to the rim. That's it. Those skills. So Brad Stevens completely embraces that, as opposed to Byron Scott, who completely doesn't embrace it at all.
And even a little bit.
So, and I bring Byron Scott up specifically because he's the Lakers coach, and when you think about where the free agents would go and won't go, and today the story about Byron Scott, as an aside, was that he doesn't care about wearing his guys out in the preseason. Meanwhile, teams like Golden State are putting these body monitors on so they specifically don't wear their guys out. So you've got in Brad Stevens the at the forefront of the new NBA, embracing the style, embracing the analytics, embracing the new tools, the new approach, and other coaches in the league like Byron Scott still stuck in the past. And as much as I love that basketball from the past, it's just not how it is anymore. And in 15 years, maybe we go back to that because of the types of players who are out there. But right now, this is it. So, I mean, Brad Stevens is the guy. Every time I saw Amir Johnson sound today, and I saw David Lee sound today, and they're just gushing about Brad Stevens and the things that he can get out of his players, how smart he is, how prepared he is. And you just can't help but think that that is why they're excelling. And even like Isaiah Thomas, who is a volume scorer and very happy to be the guy who just goes out and gets 40 points, who came into camp, and you've seen it, came into camp with kind of an adjusted type of style based on that Cleveland playoff series and based on the things that Stevens has told him. That is a huge impact for a coach to have on a player in just half a season.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Stevens is a stud, and I think people recognize that. Unfortunately, the free agent class next summer is not very good. So they might really be hoping that the Nets are absolutely terrible, which they might be.
They are.
And that the Mavericks pick will also land in the lottery, which it might.
It could.
And if the Celtics do get 48 or 50 wins and then get two lottery picks, including a top five pick from Brooklyn, like, that would be a sweet, sweet, sweet season.
That would be amazing. So really the best case scenario is the Celtics actually do live up to the bright side and get like a 3 or 4 seed in the East. Brooklyn goes into the lottery and wins it. And then the Mavericks go into the lottery and get, what are we, top 7 protected? So they
get eighth pick. Yeah.
So the Celtics' best case scenario is high seed in the playoffs, win a series or two. I'll just win a series. And then after that, go out and have the number 8 pick in the draft.
And all type of cap space. Don't forget about cap space. And a young core with a great coach who's also very young. And should be here for a long time. But we're not trying to get your hopes up, John.
Marcus, that's all right.
And Marcus Smart will be well on his way to becoming James Harden.
Right. We got the next James Harden. We got two top 10 picks. We're going to end the show here. Because otherwise my head's just going to explode, and we don't want to see that.
Got to end it there on a high note.
This is a good first show. I think we kept it to right about an hour or so, which is right about where we want to keep it. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We want to do this for the full season, so we're going to have dozens of episodes, and we're just going to keep it going. We're going to figure out more interactive elements. We're going to have you guys tweet us. We'll answer some questions, and we'll work some other stuff in. This is just episode 1. We had a lot of technical things we had to work out. But
yes, we did.
We're going to figure it all out and make it better, and hopefully we can grow as much as the Celtics are growing over the season. So for Jay, I'm John.
We need to get 48 wins too.
48. We got to get 48 good shows. We need as many good shows as the Celtics have wins.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of pressure. I don't know if I can live up to it. So for Jay, I'm John. That's the Reigning Jays podcast. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Hi, Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.